The Zone is presented by Guaranteed Foods, delivering all-natural food to Midwestern families since 1958. Enjoy healthier food, more free time, free delivery, and better value. Go to GuaranteedFoods.com.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you. Sterling Holmes, Jack Johnson, Dylan Michaels. We'll talk with Josh Kaiser coming up at noon. One Royal Way podcast. Mick Schaefer at 1 o'clock. Learn funniest best with Mick. And, of course, we'll hear from the Chiefs coming up this hour. Phase one of OTAs starting. So Andy Reid, Nick Bolton, and Patrick Mahomes will talk. We will hear from them and let you hear what they have to say as they will be defending their Super Bowl championship yet again, and they will be the reigning Super Bowl champions when the draft comes up on a week from Thursday. And we'll hear from them coming up this hour. 913-912-4810. We talked a lot about the Masters and Scottie Scheffler and what he was able to do over the weekend. And obviously the Royals and losing the series. Tex says Porter's hitting 412 in AAA right now. I mean, it sounds like Carter Jensen to me. I mean, come on, man. Just get the kid up here. Let's go, man. Let's do this, man. 913-912-4810 says, not even mentioning how many concussions he's likely had. Talking about, you know, Salvi and the injuries there. Tex says, let the umpire call strikes and balls, but let the machine beep in the ear to let him know which one it was. Strike. Heck! It's a good call. It's a good call. Ball. It's a little outside. A little outside.
100% accuracy.
Have you seen the minors, though, what they do? Like, they just a couple of times they'll just say, do the replay.
Paul Skeens
is the king of this.
It was brilliant. Did you see that, Jack, over the weekend? When Paul Skeens, the same inning, he had a 2-2 count, and he throws a pitch on the inside, and the umpire called it a ball, and he was like, challenge. And they were talking about, like, you know, they want the catchers to challenge, they don't want the pitchers to challenge. And the ball was, like, just barely a strike. Like, the strike zone cut the ball in half. But it's a strike. That guy's out. Two batters later, 3-2 count. Almost the exact same spot. Umpire ball. Challenge. Even less of a strike, but still a strike. After review, the call is overturned. It was a strike. Strike three. The batter's out of the inning. Like, you're talking about, you know, millimeters.
He's got a good feel for the zone.
That Paul Skeens is like... No, dude, I know that was a strike. It was just brilliant how close those things were. And he's like, nope, replay it again. Replay it. That's a strike. Not just like frustrated, like, bleep that, replay it. It missed by 3 inches. Come on, man. No, just barely hitting the strike zone was just awesome to see.
Yeah, I wish the majors, and they actually might, hopefully, because they like to, you know, try things out in the minors. Mm-hmm. The bigger bags, the shift, the pitch clock. This would be one that I think would be very entertaining. Almost every single sport has the ability to challenge. Baseball has the ability, but not when it comes to balls and strikes. This, to me, would be a step in the right direction. Now, how many can you do? Because that's going to slow the game down. But you already sped the game up so much in the pitch
clock.
It doesn't
slow it down much, though, because it's a lot like tennis in the replay, a challenge. It's pretty quickly. Boom, that was in, that was out. This was pretty quickly. Let's challenge. Challenging the call. They show the pitch tracks. Strike. It's a strike. Let's move on. It's not... Let's wait for New York to get back to us. Yeah. We're sitting around, we're showing the replay over and over again. Those replays are quicker, but are they quick enough to where you don't want to slow the game down?
Yeah, that's where I think it'd be a problem, is that if it was unlimited challenges, I mean, think about throwing a strike. Like, Chris Stratton could have done that three times and went, where it's like, okay, back to the, yeah, that was a strike. Oh, I think if there was a limit, maybe, but there has to be something, or either umpires that have a better field of zone, because that's the thing we go back to, is that umpires... There are good ones in this game. There are guys that are nearly flawless at their job. You can excuse a close call at first, a tag play. Like that's going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. For a strike zone, when you're missing that badly, it's like this can happen at the college level. This can happen in high school. This can happen in Little League. But you can't do it at the big league level. And that's where it's just unfortunate. Like baseball, it shouldn't have to be so many things reviewed because you're that bad at your job, right?
That's what I've talked about with the NFL. Like, how about just be better?
Yeah, just... Let's be a little bit more focused in, and if you miss a big call, it happens. But when it's consistent, it's three times in one plate appearance. That's when we have these conversations of, should we have the robot umpire? Should we have, you know, something telling them what is a strike and what is a ball? And they're basically just a human standing behind them. Because at that point, hire anybody. Yeah, like, just hire me. I can stand back there and it tells me it's a strike or ball. Yeah, I'll do that.
I'd love to do that.
I wouldn't want to get hit in the face like the umpire did in game two. That staggers me. But, you know, that's baseball, I think, has gotten right where they want to be of what you can review, what should be a human element part of the game. But it's still frustrating that you can have this many mistakes. Not once or twice over nine innings. Like, we're talking seven or eight problems throughout the game.
I know, and people are talking about, in the NFL, you should be able to review this or review that. It's like, how about the refs just be better? Just be better. Like in college basketball, we were talking about, oh, why can't you review? That was a clean block shot, the KU game.
Yep.
It was a clean block. You should be able to review that. Go review that. Or just be better. Just be better. I mean, if you want to give a challenge to a coach, I get that. Like, people are advocating a challenge system late in the game.
Well, they have an NBA.
They do have it in the NBA. But also, how do we know for a fact that the coach wouldn't have used this challenge before? I mean, that was 14 seconds or 10 seconds left to go in the game. He may or may not have used it, but at least if it was there, you could say, okay, well, if he had the challenge available. But also, you know, don't anticipate the call. Just be better. I mean, yes, 99 times out of 100, that's a foul. But your job is to make sure that if it's a foul, I'd rather them miss a call that they didn't see, then call a foul that they clearly didn't see a foul because there wasn't a foul. And people are talking about it. Just be better. Just be better at your job. And the same thing with the NFL. Replay pass interference. Just be better.
Well, I also think what's interesting is there's a lot of gray area when it comes to fouls, pass interference, what you can and can't get away with, right? I think there's a lot of gray area. Strike zone, there's not. Like, strike zone, either it's a strike or it's a ball. That should be reviewable.
Pretty objective. It's pretty close to objective for being what is, you know, typically a subjective thing in today's game with the human element.
But that's my point. That should be easy to review. Like, I understand when you say, like, in basketball or the NFL, like, well, pass interference, well, he had his hands on him, but full speed, did it move his route? There's all these different things that has to check off.
Mm-hmm.
Strike zone's just, was that a strike or was that a ball? There shouldn't be any long, as you mentioned, like, we got to go to Secaucus. We got to go check this bad boy out. No, we're right here.
It's a lot like tennis.
You're correct.
It's either on the line or off the line.
Well, it's also, strikes and balls, they should be pretty, you know, point blank right there. It's not going to be too much of an issue. Dave, when you get a good umpire, they can make the right calls. But you do have guys that just simply can't get in good position, or they just don't have, you know, the bang-bang know-how of a close play. I know exactly, you know, what I saw there. It's close. Like, look at when Nelson Velasquez stole third on Saturday, I think it was. Tag wasn't even close to getting there. And he's like, I just guessed. He's like, oh, I think he's out, right? And Nelson Velasquez reacted as in, he didn't touch me. And who was that? Ever at third base? Might have been Jeff McNeil or something like that. He didn't act like he got him. And it's like, this should, like, how can you miss that badly? I get the bang-bang play. Oh, it was really, really close. But at the end of the day, it just feels like umpires are secure with their jobs. If I miss it, I missed it. We do have reviews.
Well, I was also going to say, there's not as much taking advantage of that rule. With the tag at second, with the review, I hate this, and I still think Major League Baseball needs to find a way to have it in the rule book. Like, you know when the player slides and they're just a millimeter off the bag? Well, that's not why they had the review in place. The review in place was to see if they got him before or not, if he actually slid off the bag a little bit or not. Right? When you pop up this much off the bag, for all the listeners, you can't see, my fingers are nearly touching, they should be there. There should be a, I don't know how you would describe that. You can pop off the bag six.
So everything, once you touch the bag, everything directly above the bag is still safe?
But to an extent, like, When you slow it down that much and they're a millimeter off the bag, he clearly beat it. He clearly is there. That's not what the review was meant for. You won't have that with the strikes, and there's not going to be people taking advantage of that. Like, I think people do take advantage of stealing second. You know, you'll keep the bag on nonstop. They'll try and push him off. I get all that, but that's not in the spirit of the rule.
Well, I think also, even if Lindor would have made the tag on Hampson, you call him safe because he crossed him over. Like, I've never seen a baseball crossover move.
Eurostep.
That was a Garrett Hampson Eurostep that Lindor and spun around. That was brilliant, man. He got picked off and still was, it was a terrible throw. terrible throw to Lindor, who had his back to him, and then he saw the corner of his eye, Hampson showing the leg like it was a football player getting ready to cut back inside, and then he crossed him over, man. That was brilliant.
It's not like he crossed up like Lucas Duda either. Like, Lindor's athletic as hell. He's one of the more athletic players, so this was impressive in all elements. But, yeah, I mean, those plays, those can be tricky, right? Those can be tricky. Was he out of the base path? Was like,
right.
And I don't want baseball to get to a point where it's, let's review everything. But, man, it does have to get to a point where it's just, yeah, be better at your job, have a better feel, or don't have 9 or 10 blown calls in the game. I can live with one or two, one that happened in the second inning. Oh, that was low, strike three, fine. You can't miss in those spots. You can't miss tag plays. The like a situation like, man, I'm already forgetting his name, but Armando Galarraga's perfect game.
Yeah.
Jim Joyce.
Jim Joyce,
yeah. It's like, in that spot, you can't miss it like that.
I wish they'd go back and redo that and just give them the perfect game.
I wish they should.
It wasn't even close, and you're in that situation. How the hell do you not err on the side of the perfect game?
Jim Joyce felt for him, though. Like, that's why I have respect for him. He was crying.
He was went the next day and apologized and was still crying and couldn't, you know.
Had the press conference, had the entire team come out of the dugout and try to get to him, and then, you know, when he saw the replay, it's like, that's what we want. And maybe you don't make any change if umpires were just more accountable to what it is. If they admitted, I blew that call, as we talked about with the pitcher of, hey, I missed that, I'll get you next time. That's all I think you hope for. And we don't know everything happens. Maybe, you know, Chris Stratton, when he walked off the mound, he said, hey, those were close. That's my bad. But he's still
my
like,
bad. My bad
screw
for
you.
My bad for screwing you over and helping out that 6 ERA. That's my fault. Yeah, it is your fault.
Yep.
Jerk. Texas with the replay stuff. Only if Gene Steratore handles the non-committal part. You know, guys, certainly looks like a strike for me as a guy who's never called balls and strikes in my life. I do think this. They are actually trying to emphasize balls and strikes this year in Major League Baseball, guys. It is. I'm going to go with strike on this one, fellas.
Why is Gene going to do football and basketball? By the way,
because he did both. I mean, he was an NCAA ref and an NFL ref. So he was awesome at both. I like Gene Steratore, and I just love that no matter what, his first words are, you know, guys.
From my expert opinion.
You know, guys, you're right about what you're talking about there. Gene Steratore, just put him on Major League Baseball, too. He becomes the official of officials. No matter what, he is the replay guy that you go to and hear him talk about it.
I wish there was more animosity with it, too. Like, what if Nance and Romo are like, I really don't think that was a flagging company. He said, you're absolutely wrong. There's no way in any way, shape, and form that shouldn't be called a hold. It's just always, you guys are right. You're on the right track. It's like the nice teacher.
You know, guys, there are times you guys are wrong, and then there's this time where this is the dumbest thing you've ever said, actually. It's pretty obvious, Romo, that this call is correct. The fact that you think it's not makes me question your ability to even do color commentary.
It'd be more enjoyable. I'd like Gene more. A little bit more venom.
Jim?
You're probably right, Gene.
I love to know.
I don't know, Jim!
I don't know, Jim! I'd love to know his percentage of how many times he agrees with the ref and then is wrong, because I feel like we need to have a counter of he agrees with the ref how many times out of 10?
Gene. 9.
9.5. 9.
And if the call was wrong and he gives some excuse as to why the call was made.
It's never like, that guy was, he is bad. That guy is really bad at his job.
Worked with this guy for years. He sucks at what he does. He's never gotten these calls right.
He was hammered the night before. He's very hungover out there, guys.
You know, guys, I'm actually not sure why this guy is working this game. He's been terrible ever since I've known him. And he also slept with my wife. But other than that, I just think this is a terrible call by this guy in this situation. Tony?
Then you'd want to see Gene. Then I'm like, bring on Gene. Then I make T-shirts.
Then they should challenge everything. Like every single challenge. I don't care what it is. Just challenge.
Just get Gene on here.
Concern level of the guys with the highest leverage situation have the highest ERA in the bullpen. Is there an element of to be expected because you are going up in the toughest situations? But Will Smith with almost a 13 ERA, Stratton with a 6 ERA, Nick Anderson with above 7 ERA, MacArthur above almost a 5 ERA, Zerpa sub 2, Schreiber. No, Schreiber's been high, so I should include him in the leverage, and he hasn't given up a run this year. So that and Sauer and Lyles haven't been in leverage situations, so I don't really want to throw them in there. But Schreiber and Zerpa have been the guys in leverage situations that have come through. But any concern that we mention MacArthur, Stratton, Anderson, Will Smith, that those guys have those inflated ERAs?
I think when you look at this bullpen, it's not dominant by any means. I think we all know that. And some of the ERAs are mainly because of a really bad first week. Then they had their stretch of 19 scoreless innings that brought some of the ERAs down. John Schreiber, to me, has been really the only one in the circle of trust. Serpa from time to time. But Schreiber comes in when it's really close. It's a one-run game. It's tied. It's a two-run game. He's the perfect guy for that spot. When I look at somebody like Chris Stratton threw over 80 innings last year, had a sub-4 ERA. I'd take the exact same thing this year. I look at Nick Anderson. When he's healthy, when his stuff is working, he's not going to have an ERA over 7. And also, a couple of times the bullpen blew the game. The offense didn't do him any favors.
That's like, what I said. Yesterday's game, to me, wasn't on the bullpen. It was on the offense scoring one run.
Yeah.
I mean, the entire team gave up 2 runs in 9 innings. You win that game. Yeah. You should win that game.
And that's where you just kind of look at who's out there. Right? Are we really going to expect Chris Stratton, every time he takes the ball, strikes out the side, nobody touches him? No, probably not. I also think what Royals fans can look forward to, like Carlos Hernandez, when he's back, he probably goes in a spot like that instead of Chris Stratton. So right now they're kind of having to use certain guys in spots that they may not be used in all the time. Like Will Smith, he might be the only one I'm concerned with because there's not been one outing this year that it was, that looked pretty good. Like even the scoreless outing he had in Baltimore, he got the save. It was Ryan Mountcastle hit a ball, or maybe it was Adley Rutschman, hit a ball that was out in 29 of 30 parks. It was caught, but that would have been a run anywhere else. So it's not like he's had that one outing where you go, all right, he's back, he looks good. It's been ugly every single time he's taken the bump.
Who was the, and I should know this because it's such a historical play, but the pitcher on the play that Willie Mays with the amazing catch in center field over the shoulder, and they came in and it was a pitching change after that, and the at least the legend goes that when the manager came to take the ball, he goes, did my job, knowing how absurd that catch was,
that's
and just
out.
How historic, did my job, Will Smith, that's an out, did my job. I don't care how many ballparks.
Goes down.
Yeah. He knew I'm where he's playing.
I'm pitching to this park, damn it, okay? You can crush that thing to left field all day. We got a guy there, Jeff Montgomery would call it stupid hitting. Like, you hit it right at that guy, dummy. We got a guy there. One's hit off the bat? Yeah, right to him, you jackass. We got a guy there. You stupid. The thing that would be concerning is not just the ERA, but it's Stratton and Nick Anderson, 11 walks and 7 Ks. Mm-hmm. Like that's in 11 innings. Like 11 walks in 11 innings. That's also to where it's like, do you trust your stuff? Are you concerned about pitching in the zone because you might get hit around? Like the walks are because you're not striking guys out to then, make up for the walk.
Well, and that's Stratton's issue, is he's not a strikeout pitcher. Last year, 81 strikeouts in 82 innings. Year before, 60 and 63. If we're talking about 1980, he's pretty solid. But for a reliever in today's baseball, that's not necessarily outstanding.
Again, it's probably average, though, if you're getting a strikeout per inning. I just don't want to walk per inning.
4 of those walks also came last night. So I think
that's
small
true.
Sample
that's
size.
Good point. That's a good point.
Stratton typically thrives in the giving up soft contact. And he's been that this year. He's in the 100th percentile in average exit velo.
And he got the soft contact. It was just too soft.
And that's
the ball never left the infield in that.
And what, so is it a 70-foot single? that sucks.
But that's where I'm at with Chris Stratton, is I'm not necessarily worried. He's doing what he's typically done. Just last night, the soft contact ended up as a hit. And the walks were, again, partly on him, partly on the umpire. I'm not necessarily worried about Chris Stratton. Do I think he's elite? No, I don't think he's just this phenomenal reliever. But I think, can he be the 3.92 ERA guy? Can he be the seventh inning guy? Yeah, I still believe in him there.
Is there a consistency that'll come with this offense? I do wonder. If Salvi's out for an extended period of time, that would be a concern. But, they've already played 5 games out of the 16 that they've scored, 2 or fewer runs. They're 1-4 of those games, which, by the way, I'll take it. If you're scoring 2 or fewer runs and you 1-4, hey, great. They're also 5-0 in games where they score double-digit runs. I also would hope you'd be undefeated in those games as well. But there's a little bit of the hot and cold of the you're going to break out the bats or can you scratch across a few runs. Like this series is as evidence as anything. You score 1, you score 11, you score 1. Just back and forth at hot and cold. Maybe they should throw Alec Marsh every game. Every game, just if Cole Reagans is out there, put your Marsh jersey on. You know, it's like, well, he's actually going to wear the Marsh jersey today, and the offense, like, crap, Marsh is on the mound. Let's go score some runs.
And he's throwing lefty?
It's weird.
And 100?
This guy's ambidextrous. Look at this guy looks like Cole Reagans on the mound. If Marsh looks like this every 5 days, this is going to be amazing. I don't know if there's consistency with this offense, or is this just simply their DNA moving forward is an offense that's going to put it all together one game and might struggle to score some runs, and you're going to have to rely on the starting pitching and the bullpen to come through, as opposed to can you take those 13 runs you scored and mix them throughout the game and you feel better about winning 2 of 3?
I thought a really good indicator of what this offense on a usual night could look like was honestly what the Baltimore series was like. I thought they had really good at-bats. They didn't put up 8, 9, 10 mm-hmm. runs, but they were in every single one of those games and had a lot of great at-bats and hit with runners in scoring position, not really in game one. Excuse me. I had my cough button's way too far away. But
it's across the room.
Let me know and I'll hit it for you.
Actually, I should start doing that.
You could have like one of those extenders. to reach over.
Or I can just use this damn mic maybe once in a while.
That seems too obvious. Don't worry about it.
But you don't like the boom or bust. And I think with this Mets series, I mean, the Mets, I think, have the number one ERA in the National League. Like, this was a good rotation they faced. And also Jose Buto yesterday. I don't know many offenses that would have hit them. Not to make an excuse, but you do like some of the advanced numbers, some of the sabermetrics, the data on what a lot of these hitters represent. They hit the ball incredibly hard. Like yesterday, MJ Melendez's first at bat, he hit a ball 108 miles an hour. The expected batting average was 950. It was caught. Like that just
it seems like he's pretty stupid for hitting it there.
Yeah, he's dumb to hit it. Harrison Bader, who's a Gold Glover, right?
Yeah.
But I do think this offense has those numbers that you're not going to have that stretch, which is a great thing, of a week long where you're averaging 2 runs a game. Like it's a 162-game season. You might have one. But I think over the course of their first 6, 7 hitters, there's a lot of guys that if you just get 5 runs, you give that to Cole Reagans, you're going to win the game. You give that to Seth Lugo, you're probably going to win the game. It comes down to when Brady Singer's starting and maybe he doesn't have his best stuff, or Marsh like on Saturday, they can erupt for 10 or 11 runs. But also the frustrating part is Cole Reagans tosses 6 shutout innings and you lose 2-1 in that game.
Well, you know, I'm a process guy, and looking back at kind of what you're saying, like Michael Garcia is a perfect example of this. You look at some of the metrics he has, very, very good. He has been the typical Royals unlucky guy. You know, Kendrys Morales had that for a long time, every single year, and you're always annoyed by the announcers going, well, he's just being unlucky. Like, yeah, but Michael Garcia actually has been a little bit unlucky this year, but I do think the up and downs, the roller coaster of the offense is going to sustain. I think that's who they are. That's in their DNA. I said it going into this year, and I'll say it still now, even though the Royals' record's very, very solid. You know, MJ Melendez is prone to very highs and lows. Michael Garcia has been like that in his career. I think Hunter Renfroe, even though he's a professional hitter, as a lot of managers like to say, he's been a streaky guy. Kyle mm-hmm. Isabel, are you really trusting him to be a dude who's going to be consistently down there, bottom of your lineup? Again, I think you have Bobby Witt Jr., Salvi, and Vinny as your three guys who you consistently feel fairly constant about. But outside of those guys, there are going to be a lot of ups and downs, which is just baseball in general. I mean, Nelson Velasquez, if he keeps going the opposite field, I think that his lows won't be quite as low as we originally thought with him, because if he is slapping the ball to right, especially when they're shifting on him to an extent, you're happy. But no, you're going to see a lot of highs and a lot of lows with this type of offense.
Let's take a timeout. We'll come back, continue rolling. We'll hear from the Kansas City Chiefs, Andy Reid, Nick Bolton, Patrick Mahomes. We'll talk with Josh Kaiser coming up at noon. More Zone right after this. All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you. Sterling Holmes, Jack Johnson heading up until noon. Dylan Michaels hanging out with us. We head up until 2 o'clock. Josh Kaiser will join us at noon. Mick Schaefer at 1 o'clock. We'll hear from Andy Reid coming up in just a little bit. Nick Bolton, Patrick Mahomes, we'll hear from him as well. By the way, is the app fixed? Apparently it just kept skipping over and over again, kept repeating over and over again. If it is fixed, people may not know that it's fixed now because I was doing that maybe on purpose. Said stream is on a loop. Show keeps repeating on the app. How many times can I hear I'm not wanting to get hit in the face and staggered? What was it? Was it you that said the ump? I'd love to be the guy behind there, and then you got to. But you kept get hit in the face and staggered. You know that guy.
Oh,
apparently, that's when it repeated.
That's when great.
I know, right?
Great
that's awesome.
Part.
I know.
That's promotion right. For me right there. Only hearing my voice on loop.
Who is this guy, and why does he keep repeating himself? We get it, dude. We get it. You don't want to be hit in the face and staggered. How about this? Don't be a boxer. Like, I don't understand what you're talking about, man. So there you go. Those are the texts that are coming in. So we appreciate your, adding to the conversation today. Also, appreciate the heads up. That's very nice. Text says you still got to have the umps to call safe and out. They do a pretty good job of that. But it could also be challenged, though. I mean, you have the umps to call safe and out, and they do a pretty darn good job of that.
They do.
Especially those bang-bang calls at first base. How often they get those right is just absurd. Because when we were talking about, all right, they're going to implement this challenge system for, safe and out calls. It's like, boy, that's going to be a lot. I mean, 9 times out of 10, you see the manager hold his hand in the air as a stop, and then, they're thinking, all right, go ahead. It's just like almost all the time, like very rare is it like, hey, hold your, hands to your head. Like you need somebody to put on a headset to go and challenge it. They're pretty good. It's just balls and strikes are difficult. They could also be better, certainly. And you don't want to get hit in the face and stagger.
I do not.
Is the issue you run into.
I'd hope you guys share that sentiment.
That you don't want to get that. I don't.
You two both don't want to suffer.
Oh, I don't
same
want to
thing.
Get hit in the face. I don't really. If you get hit in the face and
it
stagger,
doesn't matter.
You're
I got a mask.
You're younger. You got a mask on.
I'm a psycho. I've gotten stitches on the dome 5 times.
Just,
oh yeah.
The face or the dome?
Five times.
Where at?
Chin once.
So you took one on the chin.
Lip twice. Or no, lip once. Two there.
You didn't keep the baseball off your lips like Frank White says.
Two on this eye. As you can see, my eyebrow has still been up. So that's 4.
Oh, yeah,
and
I see that, yeah.
5 here on the other eye.
Was this all baseball related?
No, just different things.
Was it just you, your mouth writing checks that your face was cashing?
No, one was a baseball bat. Yeah, one was a baseball bat. One was a TV that fell on me. One was a snowball fight in the basement of the fraternity house that got real slick because it was like stone or tile. That was my lip.
You got hit by a snowball or you slipped and fell?
No, I slipped because it was very, very wet down there. Yeah, just a lot of melted snow.
Yeah.
And then one was rollerblading when I was younger. The helmet actually was the one that got me. That's why
the helmet cut your eye.
The helmet cut my chin.
How does the helmet cut your chin?
Yeah.
Oh, like the strap that was on
the strap. You know,
okay,
like the buckle. Mm-hmm. And it was just bad.
Well, thank God for the helmet because the helmet saved your brain and your head.
Did it though?
You got a little scar on your chin.
Think it saved me because I think that maybe it. I don't know.
You got a scar on your chin, not an open wound on your head.
Yeah.
You know.
True.
That's a nice exchange. How
so,
about
yeah,
this?
Five times.
How about this? Don't go rollerblading. That's the safe way to do it. That's always been my. It's like, oh man, you hurt yourself skateboarding. An easy fix is just to not skateboard. I certainly wouldn't do that.
I think the other one was a table. I think so. I'm basically Frankenstein's monster.
You jumped through the table?
I don't remember. I was younger.
Oh, okay. I don't know. Maybe that was last week. And she was like, Bill's Mafia ain't got bleep on me. Just like King Kong and Denzel Washington. 913-912-4810 is the text line. We'll hear from the Chiefs in a little bit as they are having their press conference for the Phase 1 of OTAs. This is something I think we'll talk about over the next, 10 days, 11 days? Yeah, 11 days. What positional group would you be like, surprised, like legit surprise that they took outside of quarterback and running back? So quarterback and running back are gone. Okay, we know they're not taking a quarterback in the first round. They're not taking a running back in the first round. And I ask the question because Like, legitimately, so many different options are there. If they went cornerback, okay. You just lost L'Jarius Sneed. You're now deeper at that spot. You just showed that you can win a Super Bowl with a dominant defense and the offensive skill position players that you had, and you've already added one better. You've improved from MVS to Hollywood. Safety? Well, you know what? Justin Reed, this is his last year. You got to replace him at some point.
Are you saying first round?
First round only. First round only, pick number 32.
Oh, I would be very disappointed if they drafted a safety in the first round.
If it's the best safety on the board, number one
yes,
safety on the board.
I would be.
And you've got to replace Justin Reed and his $12 million.
Yes, I'm typically best player available, but safety is a position that I think you can fill extremely easily later on in the draft or with a veteran. I would not go first round safety.
Let me change that. Not disappointed, surprised.
I would still be surprised if they went first-round safety.
I'd have to say linebacker. I know that we talked a little bit about Nick Bolton, but you just extended Drew Tranquil. Leo Chenal seems to be a really good pickup, and that's exactly why I wouldn't go first-round with a linebacker, and I have 99.9% confidence that wouldn't happen, but you got Leo Chenal in the third round. Yeah. So why would there ever be a need, really, in my opinion, to go first-round linebacker unless he was the second coming of... Derek Johnson.
DJ. Yeah.
I was going to say.
Well, the linebacker was the only one that I landed on and that I'd be really legit. And we're eliminating quarterback and running back, obviously, because those would be the two. I'd be floored if there was a running back in the first round taken by the Chiefs. Just not happening. And floored if they took a quarterback as well. But linebacker is the one because, again, if they took an interior offensive lineman. Okay, well, maybe they're already looking and planning on Joe Tooney. Maybe they're planning for Trey Smith. Maybe this is the best guard. Faotanu is a guy that people think could move down to guard. So it's like, oh, you draft him. Is he a tackle? At worst, he's going to move down to guard, whatever it is. Tackle wouldn't surprise me. Wide receiver wouldn't surprise me. If Brock Bowers were there and a tight end wouldn't surprise me. Interior defensive line wouldn't surprise me because you got Chris Jones and then, some guys you keep bringing back because you don't have better options out there on the interior defensive line. Defensive end wouldn't surprise me either because we have questions about how good FAU is going to be this year. Cornerback wouldn't surprise me, and safety wouldn't surprise me just from the fact that Brian Cook got injured. Deion Bush is your third safety right now, and this is the last year for Justin Reed. The last year for Juan Thornhill, they took Brian Cook. Yes, in the second round, they took Brian Cook, but they were already planning for the next go-round in that. I bring that up just because I feel like there's a wide range of where the Chiefs could go, where there's sort of a almost myopic view. It can't be because we're talking about two positions, but it's as close as it gets to a myopic view of left tackle and wide receiver that they're going to go in the first round.
Sure. I would also point out, I think I'd be surprised, yes, linebacker as well, but I do think guard or interior offensive line, that'd be a surprise in the first round. A lot of times I don't think the value is necessarily there for the interior as well as that's great and all, but then guards are typically players you can play as rookies week one, game one. They'd be sitting an entire year at a minimum. And that, for me, wouldn't make a lot of sense for a team like the Chiefs. Although I do think they need more depth on the interior.
How about
just
this?
Down the first.
How about this? They take the interior offensive lineman, and now Joe Tooney's your left tackle.
I know.
Yeah, now we're getting the head spinning. There we go. We're getting the wheels turning up there.
Why would you move an all-pro left guard to left tackle where he might be above average maybe?
Because you don't have a left tackle right now.
Well, I get that, but then now you're taking an all-pro away. I don't know if you're serious, but I don't think you're serious because you're smirking at me. I feel like you're trying to get me, I feel like you're trying to get me riled up right now, Jason, and working.
No, but legit. A first round guard, like the best guard in the draft, you place at left guard.
Sure.
And Joe Tooney plays left tackle, or Wanya Morris is your left tackle and Joe Tooney left guard. What's a better way of approaching this season?
I think Wanya Morris at left tackle and Joe Tooney, because Joe Tooney, we know, is a all pro. He's probably the best left guard in football. Mm-hmm. Where is he at left tackle? Where would you rank him?
I mean, average.
He's average.
Hopefully average.
He's hopefully average.
Yeah. But Wanya Morris has been below average.
As a rookie.
Agreed.
Again, maybe this is because I'm higher on Wanya Morris than most. I'm taking the all-pro left guard with the hopefully average left tackle rather than, okay, let's move the all-pro left guard to become an average left tackle, and now we have to fill his spot where not going to be an all-pro at left guard anymore. Like, no, I'm out
on that. No, here's what you do. You draft the best center, And now you move Joe Tooney to left tackle and Creed Humphrey to left guard.
Move everybody left.
That's exactly right. Move them all left. Actually, and you take Wanya Morris and you make him a tight end. You move him one spot down the line of scrimmage.
But does he still have to
report his eligibility? No, you just change his number. Yeah, you're fine. I mean, you don't have Jody Fortson, so it's Morris season.
You actually don't have a right tackle anymore. You just keep going left. You just keep moving left.
No, now Blake Bell is your right tackle. Irv Smith, you know,
Irv Smith,
whoever.
You
bring him in, and he moves down to right tackle. You know, it's great. And now you've got Hollywood that'll move down to the slot, and Andy Reid now plays the X. So we just go right from the...
Well, it was a play from 1942, so he saw it and... thought it might work.
Speaking of Andy Reid, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll hear from him coming up next. All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We'll hear a lot from Andy Reid, Nick Bolton, and also Patrick Mahomes. Let's hear Andy Reid's opening statement as they get Phase 1 OTAs for the 2024 offseason underway and weighing in on Rashee Rice as well. Here's the Andy Reid opening statement.
Here we go. All right. Can everybody hear me? Are we good?
You're good. Take it away.
Okay, good. So, hey, listen, welcome back. We're glad to be getting phase one underway. We're going to do it very similar to how we've done it the last few years, just throwing, which several of them are, down with Patrick and then in Texas. So it gives the guys a little more time away from here, but at the same time getting some of their off-season evaluation work done. And the opportunity to move forward into this next season. As far as Rashee Rice goes, his situation, I'm leaving that like we've done most of these, just for the law enforcement part of it to take place, and then we will go from there with that. You can hold your quiet. I have had an opportunity to talk to Rashee, and I'm not going to obviously get into that, but anyways, that part that part has been excuse me has been gone through. So, anyways, well, really with that, time's yours here.
We'll go next to Adam Teicher.
Hey, Andy, I know you talked about Rashee Rice's legal situation. I'm not asking you about that. I'm asking about his football situation. Just curious what his status is right now. Is he participating as you guys get this started? And will he be participating when you move into the next phase and move it back to Kansas City?
Yeah, so there's no real participation other than by Zoom. So he'll participate in that. But other than that, we don't have anything going on here that he would be involved with. So to answer your question, he's participating in the Zoom.
Okay.
And again, just a reminder on this, it's voluntary. So as we go forward, that's also another part of it.
Right. And do you anticipate that when you move the next phase, it moves back to Kansas City, that it'll be participating in that phase as well?
We're just going to take it day by day here as we go.
All right, there's Andy Reid and the expected Rashee Rice questions, and the participation is Zoom, so as we know. But also, is he participating, and we'll find that out if he's participating with Patrick Mahomes in the workouts down in Dallas. We know he's down there, and other guys have been, you know, participating with that. But phase one starting with the remote process and the Zoom process, while Patrick Mahomes has the wide receivers, skill position players going through those workouts. It is voluntary. You'd also like to see your second-year wide receiver volunteer to be a part of those workouts, especially if he's in the same city with Patrick Mahomes. So hopefully that is the case. And they will take it day by day with phase two.
Don't say day-to-day.
Not day-to-day. Not day-to-day. for phase two if Rashee Rice will be in attendance in Kansas City when phase two hits. So there you go. And we'll see different, you know, Instagrams or TikToks that'll be put out with Patrick Mahomes working out with the receivers and everything, as that always happens. And we'll see if Rashee Rice is one of the guys down there. We saw Kadarius Toney's down there, so that's good.
Who's your pick for TikTok darling this year?
You know, last
year
Ross.
We had Justin Ross last year. Yeah, I'm trying to see who's going to be.
I'm not sure.
Reese Lightning?
There it is. You found it. You figured it out. Josh Kizer next.